Now, this according to what you've uncovered in your investigations, this is a different kind of UFO than what Ishmael's talking about that giant triangle. This is something more seen in Mexico, I think, smaller craft.
It impacted with the
private plane. Obviously, they were both physical because it was a crash.
Well, here's the other thing, the other part of this enigma that haunts us so much. The objects do, you know, the technologies that are employed in these objects do not have some sort of immunity to the universal laws of physics. I mean, from time to time, things go wrong. The creatures or the beings who pilot these things or control these things are not infallible. They are not apparently immortal beings. There have been many, many cases where dead bodies have been recovered. For example, Roswell, New Mexico, 1947. So things do go wrong. And another thing I always point out to people is that these beings are operating in an environment with which they are minimally familiar. It's most likely not as similar to the operating environment under which their craft were designed, engineered to function. So you have they also have exposure to waves of energy and bursts of energy that are coming from our man-made, radars and microwaves and radios. Who knows how that affects their instrumentation as well. So from time to time, there seem to have been possibly a dozen over the course of the known history, possibly a dozen cases in which there appears to have been an actual crash of a physical object, and in some cases the recovery of beings at that crash site. So these things do happen. These objects, as I mentioned, can be affected by the same rules of physics that affect our craft, and from time to time they do come down.
Ishmael Quayler, when we talk about some of these things we can't see, that brings up to another part of your investigations. You do paranormal investigations, right? I mean, I don't know if you do ghost hunting, but you do lots of different things. Is that right?
That is right, sir. We have done about 108 cases of paranormal research in home residents. We use a scientific approach. Out of those 108 cases, 30 of them considered to have some type of paranormal activity. And, of course, our group is big, and I can tell you that our group has a spiritual point of view, and then you have the other side of the group that's a little more science. You put them both together, we filter kind of put more value to our evidence with more possibility and theories. And some of the examples that we do is that we meet the family or the homeowner of the house or the location of the building, and we talk about some of the events that they're having, and most of them can be resolved to be conclusive of it was a wind draft, or we had a lady that called us up, and she was astonished about things banging on the top of the roof. We found out that she had a pecan tree right next to it, and the pecans were hitting the top of the roof, and she fell off comfort that we helped her out, that it was, explained of the events. But there's some events that we have captured that we cannot explain. We cannot say it's a ghost or a spirit because no one has seen one or anyone can claim that, but it's a theory. Just that it's unexplained, that it's paranormal. And we put everything in categories. There's, you got your energies, the mist, the shadows, and also the electro voice phenomena, which is the EVPs. And I can tell you some amazing stories of people being very skeptic, and they tell me, I believe what you do, but the bottom line is when they actually practice it and they have that field experience is what makes the difference on them change or scratch their heads that there are things up there that you cannot explain. And at the same time, we love to have fun doing it.
Yeah, when you take measurements of these unexplained things, like do you actually detect something physical, or is it just a hunch, or does something show up on your equipment?
It's more of our equipment comes out. We can't see these things, or we do see some of these things.
What does it look like, usually?
Well, you see a corner of your eyes. You see a corner of your eyes, or better say, a peripheral vision. You see more dark or more gray, and it's more like a filter. You see things that pass through your corner of your eyes. But when you turn around and you stretch it, well, maybe it was my imagination. But when you capture it in a camera, and you put one thing to another, you know, one to one. Things together, it comes up to say, well, actually, I did something because I caught it, or I able to record it with a DVR. But physical, I can tell you different change of temperature to be something common on research, like cold spots, even hot signatures. And that's where the thermal camera comes in, because this camera gives you a visual of temperature. And we have capture anomalies that resemble human and blue, which is cold, and this type of camera, which red will be hot. And that's what science and instruments help us put more value while we're capturing. And when we started doing these investigations, it's because we wanted to resolve, we wanted to give an answer, because we love to investigate by our jobs, what we do as law enforcement and criminal justice investigators. But the more that we scratch, the more that we get into this, the more unexplained. And we're just archiving every different category of paranormal activity that we have captured. Like, we have videos of just plain shadows that we have captured. We have another category of green anomalies, energies that we pick up in different buildings. And then you have the bar energies that we have captured and also in cameras. And not only that, we capture it, we have the people, the public, have brought excellent videos of surveillance of the same things we have captured, and we put those in categories. So it's a joint effort having the public participating in some of these events. But the main thing is the field experience. You actually have to practice it in order for you to say if these things real happen or not. I can tell you stories, show you videos, everything, but when you're right next to me and I give you an instrument and you come to do this practice, it's what it's going to make you determine if these things do exist or not. From my opinion, and the groups of 30 people have done this, and the public have captured things unexplained, can tell you that there are things out there unexplained. And where are they? Well, could it be a spirit? Maybe. We don't know. Could this be energy that lingers in a building that we release? Possibility. The thing is, it's unexplained. For today, it's a theory. Hopefully, tomorrow, it'll become a fact.
You know. While three of us are here, I kind of want to run a little exercise with us. I'm a nuts and bolts guy when it comes to UFOs. I think Noe Torres was originally, at least, until the more you get into this. And Ishmael is probably a nuts and bolts guy, but at the same time, you deal with spirituality and the paranormal. So here I want to kick us around. Some people say, oh, these UFOs are all imagination. You're just imagining. And just like they say, well, you see a ghost or you see a strange mist in the forest or whatever you're seeing. You know, some people just say, well, it's your imagination. And some of it can be, no doubt about it. But I've got the real feeling that these UFOs are real. And they're from someplace else, but I don't rule out the fact that there might be more than one reason. There might be some UFOs that are interdimensional or time travelers or something. What do you guys think about all this?
Well, let me tell you about, we had a lot of questions, and then talk about extraterrestrial energies that manifest in homes. We're right now analyzing a video we're not going to show it to this conference because we want to know what it is. So we're filming bats and birds and everything on night vision, but we actually are finding out orbs of energy going on top of roof, top of the roofs of houses. They go in and out like nothing. And, you know, we're filming this, and we're filming it, and it's not something common that you film. You know, we wait one night, nothing, you wait 2 weeks, nothing there, and then one day you see all these balls of light going in the rooftop of the houses, in and out of the houses, like nothing. So we're still want to determine, do all the tests, all the variables of what this could be. And once we say, okay, that's it, we cannot explain it, and then we'll bring it up to the public. But it's an amazing video that we have captured about energies coming in on top of roof houses. How that happens, we don't know. Where this is coming from, is this extraterrestrial or third dimensional? No idea, just that it's unexplained, but with a lot of theories. I had a friend of mine that's very skeptic and didn't believe in anything. You know, he saw some of the videos and everything. And I go back to the field experience. So while I was talking to him, my friend of mine, and he's a law enforcement officer, I gave him one of our cameras, a night vision monocular, and I told him, oh, there's an orb, there's an energy right here. And I gave it to him. I gave him the camera. When he picks it up, he sees that orb goes right in front of him, and it disappears. You know, I've seen this day in, day out when I practice with our research, but this was his first time. And he said about 50 times, he repeat, Mr. Cuellar, Ishmael, I saw an orb. Yeah, isn't that exciting? What do you think? He goes, well, I saw an orb. I know you saw an orb. It's all your fault. I'm not going to be able to sleep. Is that a spirit? And I go, no, it's not a spirit. We don't know what it is, but isn't that amazing? And he kept on and on that he saw an orb, and he kept on the following day. He was in shock, and we were laughing because that's the same way we reacted at the first time we saw some of these events. So he told his wife and told his family about it, and then they think that he's turning crazy, but, you know, it's not because they didn't see it. It's because they didn't witness it. You know, and some of these events are bringing up to the public. We're getting the public involved because we want to educate them. There is things out there. Don't take my word for it. Come with us, and the little that we have open to the public, we'll show you what is out there. And even though they're in denial, when they see this and they practice this, they start scratching their heads and they go, by gosh, this has been happening all this time? How come anybody wasn't talking about it? Well, you know, that's what we're here. So a little that we do is hopefully we can have more help from the public, you know, more eyes and ears in the air and the sky to give more answers, you know, to gather more information.
Yeah, Noy Torres, after all these years of investigating UFOs, and you've investigated some pretty interesting stories, including that thing up in Northern California. What do you make of all this about the UFO phenomenon, period?
Well, there's one
Is it a mixture of a lot of things?
Yeah, it's extremely interesting, Jerry, and it's one of the, at the core message of Stanton Friedman's lectures, and I've heard hundreds of hours of him speaking and read most of his books. And at the very core of the message that he always delivers is that we are extremely puffed up and arrogant and presumptuous to believe that mankind has reached a level of knowledge where we know all that there is to be known in the universe. There are worlds and universes yet to be discovered. Each year, we are told that there are thousands, hundreds of thousands of new planets that have been discovered by astronomers, many of which could be Earth-like. They've had to revise the number of potential Earth-like planets in our galaxy alone by a factor of hundreds in just the past year or two. As our technology increases, for example, once again, getting back to the night vision and infrared and equipment that Ismael and his group use, as our technology gets us a better handle on our environment, then we are beginning to see things now that we have never really fully understood in a new light. And I believe that UFOs are that way, Jerry. I believe that we're at the beginning of a revelation about them, as we are finally getting to a point where we're starting to be able to detect some of these things. Something that's very, very apparent is that, well, two things. As we've already pointed out, number one, they are operating under rules of physics of which we are not currently aware and that we do not currently have a grasp on. And that's another thing that Stan Friedman, with his background as a nuclear physicist, brings very much to bear in his lectures, and will be doing so in Laredo. But the other thing is, they apparently, based on their past observable behavior, they do not want to be seen. They want to maintain their secrecy. I don't know if it's a matter of they do not want to influence the great experiment in which they are, you know, in which they are assigned to observe. I don't know exactly why, but there is definitely an attempt on the part of these beings to remain cloaked, to remain hidden, to remain out of view. So you take those two things together, and recently, you know, President Obama, we're having our big presidential election tomorrow. Recently, President Obama said the following after landing in Air Force One in Roswell, New Mexico. He said, "We had landed in Roswell. I announced to people when I landed that I had come in peace." And then he talks about how people always ask him, have you been to Roswell, and is it true what they say? And this was the president's response. I tell them, if I told you, I would have to kill you. Now, most people took that as a joke. And there was a little, you know, when they play the tape of this, there's some people chuckles in the background of the recording. But, you know, stop and think about it. What is it that the deep layers of America's military, industrial complex, and intelligence services, we know there's information there that has not been released to the general public, nor possibly will it ever be released. So there's something somewhat disturbing about that statement.
Yeah, I agree with you, because 65 years is long enough to keep a secret.
Absolutely.
You know, there must be more to this.
And the other thing is, Jerry, that these visitors from outer space or from wherever they are, interdimensional, they've been coming to our planet for a really long time, possibly before we were even here as a species.
Yeah, there's some evidence that we might be ancestors of star children.
Exactly. And then there's also the theory that they're not really from someplace far away. They're from the neighborhood here. They just have remained undetected. You know, they may have underground bases in our solar system. They may have some kind of space-going vehicles that cannot be detected. So that's another theory. There's even a possibility they have bases here on our planet. So we don't know all that there is to be known, and leading scientists themselves, although it may pain them to admit this, they themselves must in the end admit that we're only seeing just a small part of how the universe functions up to this point.
When you fellows have conferences, you mentioned Noe and Ishmael, people come up to you afterwards and give you, you know, leads and good stories and tell you their stories, and not for publication necessarily. But can either of you or both of you tell me if you got any really interesting comments from somebody in the audience, like maybe at the Border Zone Conference, or maybe coming up here in Laredo, somebody might be encouraged to come by and talk to you about it. Because I get a lot of leads that way when I go to these conferences. I'm sure you guys do.
Well, I'll let Ismael answer first, and then I'll tell you some very interesting stories that have been told to me in the past couple of months.
I can tell you that one of the things that we haven't noticed, and we talked to the public afterwards, is because some of these things happen, and we call this not fair evidence. We make this up as a group. We call this not fair evidence. Let me give you an example. We talk to the people. If you ever see something astonishing in your backyard, it flew over your over the sky, would you talk about it? And they say, well, you know, it's kind of hard because you bring it up to your even when you meet a family member, a brother, sister, or wife, and you talk about, you know, I just saw a UFO. Even then, you know, you get question of integrity test there from your family to tell you maybe you ate too much or you drank something or you feel sick or something. But you see it again, and it touches that person. And when we have these conferences, they come up to you and tell you, what I just demonstrated, I seen it. I don't like to talk about it because people might think I'm crazy. And I told, look, right now technology, everybody has cameras and smartphones, and everybody's being educated that there's things that you can see, you can videotape this, and they bring up a lot of very good testimonial experiences. Well, there's this man in Edinburgh came up to us. He waited for us to all of us to leave. I mean, the people, he waited in line to be the last person. And we're there, and we're talking to every person, different stories and everything. And he came up to us and says, Mr. Quire, can I talk to you? And I go, yes, I brought you something I wanted to show you. It's something very interesting. So he had a bubble wrapping around this rock. And I said, yeah, it's a pretty big rock that you have right there. And so it's not a rock. It's a fossil. It's a fossil. Okay, so I get the guys right next to me, my group, and we're there. And when he's unwrapping on this, he starts saying, look, you can see a nose, and you can see a forehead, and the cheek here and everything. And at the time, I tried to see as much as I could and detail on the rock, but I couldn't see the resemblance of a face. He said, well, you know, I see something, but, you know, I really not seeing what you're seeing. And he goes, well, see it again. He flips the rock the other side, and oh, my God. It was a fossilized skull that resembles, you know, I can say an alien. And he said there was a star child, and he found this in his ranch. And he wanted to get it analyzed, and he wanted to know, you know, who, where he can get some information, you know. So it was something heavy, rock, and we all witnessed to see it. And it was a skull resembles of a humanoid, you know, it looked like those your typical grays, side view, and to this day we don't know what it is. So he wanted to know where he can get it analyzed, and in his story, the way he found it, he came from different generations that had found the rock in his ranch, and he wanted to get it analyzed, but he was afraid that the government might take it away and not get it back. So we're helping him. We're trying to get his testimonial and black and white and get everything for him so we can get that rock analyzed to see where it comes from, because it does resemble a lot of Alanian or the ones that we call gray. So
I saw that. I saw that. It was very, very impressive to me. And
interesting that you mentioned the government might take it away. I got a couple of emails here from people who say, don't give it to the government. You'll never get it back. We don't have very much trust anymore. Maybe they don't deserve any trust. I don't know. Noy, what did you find out?
Well,
you tell me you had something you wanted to tell us.
Yes, I have hundreds of stories from after I've finished my presentations. People will come up. Some of them are extremely impressive. The most impressive ones to me, Jerry, are from pilots, from law enforcement officers, and from ex-military. And I had a gentleman that sat through one of my lectures where I was talking about the Mexico's Roswell case, and he came up to me afterward. He was obviously a disabled veteran and very proud to have served in the military. And he told me a story that just knocked my lights out. He was talking about he was in the service, he was in the Air Force, and he was part of a group of soldiers that was escorting some VIPs on a transport plane, and this was in the 1960s. They were going from San Francisco, I believe, to New York, across country, and about somewhere over the western U.S., I don't remember if he said Nevada, they saw a huge formation of flying saucers, is how he referred to them. And everybody on that plane was looking out the windows, amazed at these objects darting in and out around the plane, up and down, zigzagging, going below the plane, going above the plane, disc-shaped, extremely bright, a formation of many of these, maybe between 10 and 20 of them, all around the ship. The pilots were panicking. Some of the people on the plane were extremely concerned. They were radioing in what they were looking out at out their window. And then suddenly the objects vanished. And this gentleman that I spoke to and all the other servicemen on the plane were told not to speak about what they had seen.
An amazing story. And I've heard things similar to that over the years. It's amazing that people don't talk about it more than they do, but I guess they are pretty loyal to their government, I guess.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Laredo here again for the conference. Now, where is it, what time does it start, and who all is in it, and all of that?
Yeah, Ismael, you want to tell them about that beautiful facility? I know you've been out there and checked everything out. Go ahead and tell us about where it's going to be held.
It's going to be in TAMU University, the Student Center Ballroom. We can fit about 800 people there. At the same time, we're going to be having, a public stargazing. We're going to have the largest telescope of Laredo. After the conference, we're going to have a night meeting for the public. We're going to be watching planet Jupiter and its moons. It's just amazing for how it's been looking in the South Texas part right now. So we're going to have a 16-inch telescope doing that for us. The facility is beautiful. It's state-of-the-art technology. We're going to have two giant projectors, audio, sound, text, and, of course, we're going to get this live with Internet to broadcast this. Also, this is going to be happening on November 10th. The conference starts at 9 o'clock. And it finishes at 8 o'clock. And after 8 o'clock, we're going to have that stargazing night view for the public part of the conference.
That's a beautiful campus.
Wayne, you might run by who all's there again.
That's a beautiful campus, by the way. Texas A&M International University. It's in the northeast part of Laredo, just past the airport. It's a beautiful, beautiful campus. It's so scenic and pastoral. You know, if you get there real early in the morning, you can see deer grazing. You can see javelinas and other.
Yeah, I looked up those javelinos. They're interesting-looking creatures. I had never heard of them.
And anyway, as Ismael said, it's going to be there in the student center from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. And we're going to have our featured keynote speaker, of course, is Stanton Friedman, the world's top UFO researcher. And he'll be speaking twice. He'll close off the morning session. So in other words, he'll speak right before noon, and then he'll close off the conference, speaking at the evening session from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. So Stanton is going to talk about man's place in the universe in the morning, and he's going to talk about flying saucers and science, which is also a title of a wonderful book that he has done. Flying Saucers and Science will be the evening closing lecture. We're going to have Dr. Bob Gross, whom we talked about earlier in your show, talk about the Keksberg UFO crash. And we're going to have my good friend Steve Androsko. It's going to speak about aliens in the forest. And, of course, Ismael will be presenting Laredo UFO Mysteries. And I will be bringing everyone up to date on Mexico's Roswell UFO crash near the Texas-Mexico border in 1974.
And if you're in South Texas, we urge people to go there in person and save for $10. It's an all-day affair. That's
right.
You can't get any better than that. It's $1
yeah.
an hour.
We'd like to have the public support in the Laredo area and throughout South Texas. I know people are planning to travel from where I live in the Rio Grande Valley area, traveling up to Laredo to see this. It's only about 150 miles from here to there. And we've got some folks coming in from Corpus and down from San Antonio. We appreciate the public's interest in this because this will encourage our civic leaders and our other organizations to sponsor similar events and have nationally recognized speakers of the caliber of Stanton Friedman and Travis Walton and others in the near future as well. So we appreciate everyone's support for this event. It will show everyone how much interest there is in not only in the Hispanic community, but in throughout the state of Texas in the topic of UFOs.
And if you heard our Border Zone conference coverage here on Inception Radio, we'll have something very similar this weekend. And we'll have video as well at jurypippin.com.
Yeah, I'm sure you have a link to our conference website, but just to let everyone know, it's LaredoUFO.com. Very simple to remember, Laredo, L-A-R-E-D-O, UFO.com.
Okay, thanks very much, both of you, for coming on. We're getting to become regulars here, but that's because you guys are active and doing a lot of things.
Well, thank you, Jerry. It's always a pleasure to be on your show, and thank you for inviting Ismael and myself to be on tonight. We're looking forward to visiting with you during the conference and afterward as well.
Okay, we'll stay in touch because I think you're doing a great service making these available to people worldwide. I appreciate it.
Thank
I know
you.
The audience does. We get hundreds of emails about it, and thank you.
Thank you.
We'll talk to the both of you later, and see you this weekend.